sharp blade of serrated stainless steel. And it's free when you buy any one of these products.
Hello everyone, welcome to week 6 of the Steak Knife Podcast. Today I'm joined by Nick Welch, yet again the analyst. How are you, Nick?
I'm very good, Caleb. How about you?
I'm going well, thanks. Today we're just going to have a quick look at the news wrap-up. There hasn't been too much this week with the finals coming up and the big final last night.
A lot of the non-finals teams have already delisted a few players.
A lot of them have kicked into gear. A lot of them have been implying about the availability of some players. We're also going to have a quick look at Brisbane's list. Well, not a quick look, I say quick look, but we're going to go in-depth to their list and what they need to do in terms of rebuilding and, you know, some players that they may not need. But we'll move on to the first bit of news from the week is that Tanner Smith and Anthony Morabito have both been delisted from the Fremantle Dockers.
Well, Tanner Smith was sort of an athletic key defender, but they found Sam Collins and that as a mature age player, so they probably wasn't in a position for him long term. And Morabito was given a lifeline as a redrafted rookie. And it seems that despite all his injuries, The final injury, was it a hamstring or a thigh or something like that?
I thought it was a quad injury.
A quad, it might have been. In the last few weeks, to miss out on the Waffle Finals was probably the final score.
Jackson Payne, Josh Watts, Hugh Beasley, Josh McGinnis and Billy Evans from Brisbane were all delisted as well during the week.
Few rookies in that list, so not but terribly newsworthy. I don't mean that in a mean way. But in terms of major list implications, not a significant
thing. If anything, they're just Brisbane probably just getting rid of a bit of a dead wood there.
There's probably going to be a few more players, you know, traded. We've all heard the rumours about Daniel Rich and that, whether he gets traded. Payne probably a bit unlucky.
If anything, he's probably the most unlucky, considering Brisbane got him for next to nothing after he left Collingwood. But
injuries both at Collingwood and Brisbane. Yeah,
and he was forced to play defence last couple of seasons when he spent his whole career working up as a forward.
Forward, yeah. I doubt any club will throw him a lifeline, though. His injury history is just too large.
Now we'll move on to Nathan Van Berlo, who has announced that he'll be retiring at season's end.
The ex-captain couldn't really break into the squad, could he?
Not at all. I mean, there's guys like Crouch Lyons and Brody Smith who have all got ahead of him in the first 22, and he probably didn't look like he was going to make much of an impact in the first 22 with a couple of years. So
he only played a handful of games, and even if he did want to stay on, even if there was a contract for him, he probably wasn't close to the best 22. And I'm sure Adelaide fans are very proud of the services given him over the years.
I would be if I was a Crows fan. Tate Pears also announced during the week that he would be retiring to join up with the Fire Brigade.
You say he retired with a bit of emphasis on it, because probably more likely he wasn't offered a contract and he just decided to move on, you know, with Hartley, Hurley, Mitch Brown, or possibly being three key defenders from next year, even Hooker could play back there. So retire, you know, in quotation marks.
Yeah. Ben Griffiths from Richmond has signed a 2-year extension at the Tigers as well.
It's Vickery. The probably signals Vickery as a free agent is gone, Max gone, and they need him to be the big ruck forward next to Jack Rewald. I don't see why 2-year deal, but I mean, he's disappointed as an early draft pick. He's disappointed a lot of Richmond fans.
He's had a couple of good games here and there.
Here and there, never patchy form.
And what? How old are you now? 24, 25?
Something like that. And he just never really shown the potential that
has warranted his first round.
Warranted his early draft pick. But now with Vickery probably leaving a free agency and being gone, there's a real chance for him to cement a position in that team, you know, and he's 24, turning 25 in the next couple of weeks. So hopefully the faith that Richmond gave him, you know,
hopefully he repays that.
He repays that faith.
Darren Minchington and Nathan Wright from St Kilda have both signed 2-year extensions as well at the Saints.
Well, in our discussion of, you know, retirements, trade rumours and delistings, we often forget that there's still contract re-signings, and both of these players, you know, have been large reasons why the Saints won 12 games this year, especially, you know, coming into the team in the second half of the year. And these aren't the household name superstars, but they're the forward pressure structural types, you know, that once you know, we all know St Kilda have developed their list, building their spine, you know, recruiting key defenders, key forward in through the draft and trade. These are the smaller outside types, the small forwards, the high half forwards that they need to, hopefully, well, they've re-signed them now, to build around the fact that they've developed the spine of their list.
Yeah, and even if they don't make it in the first team
regularly,
they'll be good depth players. For
and the they're still young, they're still improving. I mean, Mitchington's a very talented player, and his main limitation has been his endurance as opposed to his skill or dedication to the game. So if that keeps improving, and Wright has some skill limitations, but he's just a hard nut, and he just understands structures, he forward pressures well. And they're the heart and soul type players that you need to be the cherry on top of the physical players, your spine players, as well as your skilled midfielders.
Yeah. Adam Tomlinson from GWS has recommitted to the club amongst rumours of possibly...
Has he recommitted, though? Has he recommitted? Because there still is rumours floating around that he's going to be traded to a Melbourne club, but it's just a matter of whether he can get a trade done. GWS still have a declining salary cap, and it is floating, the rumours are floating around that in relation to their actual on-field performance, Tomlinson is one of their more high-paid players, so they're trying to, you know, with their salary cap that's still having to be reduced, put him off their books. But, you know, with Marchbank leaving and his ability to be versatile as a high half forward, key forward, wing, half back, you know, he's a very versatile player, Tomlinson. Anything would happen between now and the end of the year, especially with his with finals form. He's in the finals team now, though, so good finals form could see GWS happy to, you know, keep him into the future.
I think another thing is that with Marchbank going, he might be more inclined to stay. That's it. That's just the way I see it. But, you know, anything can happen, like you say.
Yeah.
Jack Silvani has also signed a new contract at Carlton.
This was pretty funny. The disproportionate media attention. He wasn't out of contract. He was a first-year player.
Exactly. It's just come up for no reason.
Well, it was officially announced for re-signing, but it isn't that unusual for a first-year player who plays a few good games to sign a one-year extension on top of their initial draft day contract. Because it's it works for both club and player. The player likes it because it's another year of guaranteed money. Mm-hmm. And the club likes it because, say, he breaks out in his third year, or, you know, he's a contributor to wins in his third year, he's still on a very cheap deal because it's only an extension of his draft day contract.
Yeah.
But it's not that notable of a deal. He's a son of a legend who's a son of a legend in turn. So
Where else is he going to go?
A minor one-year extension on a draft. I can see Carlton fans being happy about it, but the general media probably should have made less of a bigger deal of it than they did.
Michael Hartley from Essendon has also signed on for 2 years at the Bombers, and
he was in the same boat because he was a draftee as well.
Mm.
So, you know, he was out of contract not this year but next year. And what a great pickup for Essendon.
He's done very well, and I think he was on the Collingwood rookie list for a couple of years. He just went to Coburg for a couple of years in the VFL, and he was
the best key defender in the VFL last year.
He won their best and fairest at least once, from what I remember. So the fact that Essendon have been able to pick him up and develop him into such a good key defender, such a solid key defender in 1 year.
And he's only going to get better with less responsibility. Like, I could be a good key defender if Hurley was the number one key defender, or I was the number two key defender. I don't mean that literally, but, you know, less responsibility is going to make him a better player. So, and they probably didn't sign him for too much money in terms of the hit against the salary cap, though. So, whilst Hurley, as we discussed, is probably getting overpaid, the underpaying Hartley, so it's all even. No player gets paid to the equal amount of their on-field performance. So it probably evens out in terms of their key defensive duo.
Yeah. Hamish Hartley, it was announced during the week that he was keeping his trade options available.
It's whether Port, we talked about this in our team assessment in one of the earlier podcasts, but it's just a matter of whether Port Adelaide, you know, rebuild or not. He's a player who's in his, you know, getting onto his mid to late 20s now, could be a move to a premiership contending team and be a contribution to the midfield there.
And I think, personally, I would like to see him stay at the Power, just because I think with guys like with Monfries and Ryder coming back, there'll be less pressure. There'll be more pressure, is what I mean. I think that he could probably
help them get back into finals.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of controversy surrounding the club. I mean, for a number of reasons, and I think that Hartlett staying would be a good sign of culture and a good sign of just confidence heading into
it's tied to what direction Port Adelaide take moving forward, though, because they haven't made finals this year when they were expected to, you know, David Koch coming out and wanting finals and all that. Ken Hinckley's job isn't guaranteed. It's 2 years out of finals. Ken Hinckley's job's not guaranteed. He's a player that they could use to get an early first round draft pick if they're looking to rebuild, but if they're back in Hinckley to make finals again, he's probably not going to get traded.
Mm. Josh Green from Brisbane has also said he's keeping his trade options available. And it's not surprising considering the disappointing year he's had.
And, you know, Brisbane needing to rebuild with a new coach. What if your new coach isn't a fan of him? A few people have said, you know, what do you think? Because he hasn't got the delivery, you know, the ball movement and the defence has been terrible, it's not really his role, that he has proven in a better team he's a good player in the past. But even in a bad team, you still got to perform well, and he was in and out of the team all season.
And they're even playing a guy like Ben Keyes, who's naturally a
midfielder.
Ahead of Green.
Although I'm not sure exactly if you take some of Lepic's tactical decisions as gospel in terms of, you know, he's a better player than him. Even an out of position player is better than Green, because some of his tactical decisions were a head scratcher. But it's only hard to assess the interest in Green, because he has proven he's good in the past, and Brisbane was so terrible, bad ball movement to him, but he just wasn't getting picked for many of the games at the end of the day.
Brett Delio from Richmond has been rumoured to be wanting to leave, well, not wanting to leave, but
a few pundits have sort of said, you know, should he get traded?
Yeah, if Richmond are rebuilding. I think Terry Wallace was the first to come out and say that Richmond should consider trading him. And then I think I saw a trade rumour on Twitter that he might be looking to move to Geelong. But
I'm not sure you should trust all those, you know, social media trade.
I'm not sure about the validity of it, but you never know.
We're here to be a bit more highbrow than that in this podcast. However, again, it's the same principle. I mean, the board news has been going on. If that's successful, the board spill, or whether it triggers, you know, changes in the football department policy, could make an influence. But Brett Delidio is already, you know, 29-30. Richmond, I don't think Richmond still have a very good core with Jack Rewald, you know, Trent Koch and Alex Rance and all that. We talked about it when our Richmond list analysis. They could be back up the top very quickly, maybe not next year, if the year after. So I don't think they need to, you know, go all out to players like Delidio, who they won't get the value back in the draft to the equivalent amount of what he's worth to the team.
Yeah, and considering he's heading into his 30s now, he's probably past his peak.
I was comparing it to someone like Sean Burgoyne, who's traded from Port to Hawthorn, a premiership contending team, but Burgoyne was like 2 years younger than what Delidio is now, so
he's probably a better player. He's probably better.
Similar in that they were sort of, you know,
on the fringes,
maybe? Well, not on the fringes, just the roles that they played through midfield and occasionally half back in that. It's just, you know, from a team on the decline to a team on trade to a team on the rise. But yeah, I don't think it'll be trade.
Jack Frost from Collingwood. Funnily, he's been Brisbane have shown interest in him.
I cannot believe this. Brisbane are making list making decisions like that. They're headed for the bottom again next year.
Although it sounds extremely weird and extremely odd decision from a list management perspective, it does make sense that they're looking at key defenders.
Definitely. I mean, they've got Harris Andrews, but they need support around him. It makes me wonder, when these news come out in the rumours, how often is the player manager trying to drive up prices? Is Frost trying to get more money from the Magpies? And by exaggerating interest from other clubs, that's a way to leverage something in trade negotiations.
And with Nathan Brown being rumoured to possibly want to leave, he's probably got a little bit more motivation to, you know, get an upgrade. He might be looking at a first team spot either at the Pies, or if not, he'd be looking for a pay rise at another club.
Also, with Brown as a free agent and probably leaving, you know, multiple clubs have shown an interest, and now there's Foss news coming out. Does that mean that Collingwood have, you know, interest in a key defender?
They probably do, even though they do have Lachlan Keefe coming back from suspension next season.
You can't bank on the fact he's going to be a best 22 player, though.
You can't, though, because with the year out of the game, it's going to be the same impact that Essendon will have.
Yeah, and
got so many players coming back.
And it shows that they're going to back in
Ben Reid
and Jonathan Marsh as key defenders next year. So maybe they're number one and two key defenders, and they're looking to work around that, and they don't see either Brown or Frost, even though they've played the majority of games, as their duo into the future. So, interesting to see how Collingwood look at their key defensive group.
It'll be very interesting to look at, considering, you know, with it, should either Brown or Frost or both of them leave, their defensive stocks will be not diminished, but they'll be losing it. They'll lose a fair amount of value. Jared Lyons from Adelaide, although he's had a pretty good season, he's been rumoured to possibly be leaving as he's coming out of contract.
Well, he's probably the player that's most benefited from the getting rid of the sub rule in terms of his structure.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I think a club who analyses his game carefully will realise that he's played very well because the Adelaide tactical system suits him. So if you take him away from that tactical system, he's not going to demonstrate his... I mean, good on him for having a good year, but, you know, the Adelaide way of, you know, really good ball movement out of defensive half, you know, a lot of
swift counter-attacks,
you know, long-kicking, smaller outside players. And he just fits that to the tee of half-packing through the wing, you know, running and spreading, kicking long. If he's in a situation where he's not running in waves off half-packing, kicking long and getting out into space, and maybe with a teenager's slower ball movement, he's not going to be such an effective player. So why, if he's smart about his own game, and if teams are smart about the type of player he is, he'll probably be staying at Adelaide.
And finally, we'll finish on the news regarding Lin Jong. Now, he has been rumoured to be wanting to go to Collingwood. He did tour their facilities, but that interest from Collingwood has sort of petered out a little bit.
And now Gold Coast news reports have suggested that.
Yeah, and now Gold Coast seem to be coming into the fray a little bit. And there were pictures in last night's win over the Eagles, which most Dogs fans would be very happy to talk about today.
But the images of Lin Jong, you know, crying
on the bench, Dr. Barry Zinnemann.
Heartbreaking for a dog supporter like myself, but there's been rumours that, you know, he's very close, or if not already, committed to going to Gold Coast. You'd probably recruit him because they're missing that really hard at it nut like Jong is, with a loss of, you know, Presti and now and Amira most likely. Amira certainly. So they have a lot of the light body players and need someone a bit bigger. And I think there's also a bit of people have judged Jong's game a bit this year. Like, in the past, he's been abused. He's a very quick player, so he's used his speed a bit more, but he used to run himself into trouble. Now he's a bit more of an extractor type. His meters gained and are actually down on
he's
last
more
year.
Of an inside mid.
He's more of an inside mid. He wins high proportion of contested balls. So his job now is just to get in tough, lay tackles, win the hardest of hard balls, and then feed them out to better ball users and better uncontested players on the outside. So from a purely a list management perspective, he's probably perfect for Gold Coast. They need bigger bodied inside hard enough players.
And he'd probably be able to cement a spot in the first 22.
Certainly, without a doubt. We don't mirror Impressio leaving. Just, you know, someone who's looking at it from a list management perspective sort of pales in comparison to the emotion that he showed, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it was even as a fan in the neutral and watching last night's game, it was very hard to see him in that, you know, in that condition. It was, you know, he's such a cult. He's not just a cult hero. He's a multicultural ambassador in such a culturally diverse area of Melbourne. Lots of young kids of other ethnicities look up to him, and for him, and like a move would probably sort of take away from that a little bit.
That is implication as well, but I don't think you should massively make decisions in that regard if you're looking at building premiership.
It's more of a list perspective sort of thing, yeah.
You know, the cultural ambassador aspect is, multicultural ambassador aspect is, whilst it's good for the club, you know, a good list management team shouldn't put too much weight into that sort of thing. It's a sort of thing
that you wouldn't really look into much from a list management perspective.
Yeah, you're not going to build. You need to be ruthless in building a premiership team, and whether you're picking one player over another, you know, not on their performances, but on the fact of whether they're a multicultural ambassador or not. Yeah, and as good as the program as it is, you know,
it's not
the ruthless nature you need.
It's not the first sort of thing that you look at when you make a decision as to whether you keep.
Well, it's not the first thing you should look at. Yeah.
Yeah. Now we'll have a look at the Brisbane Lions list. Now, it's, you know, they've had a pretty poor season. They were less than 1% away from finishing below the Bombers.
Gee, yeah, I know. And, you know, they've sacked their coach now, and they haven't even appointed a... They're looking for a new football administrative boss, so they haven't even appointed a panel to interview potential new coaches. Not that it is a huge deal, because I can't interview assistant coaches until from finals teams until their season is over. But, you know, there still is going to be a lot of manoeuvring and discussions by the list management team, so we're here to talk about that.
Yeah, one thing that Lepich did get right this year, I think, is that he was very, you know, he was very, very willing to try a lot of youngsters.
And you should have also said... For all of Lepich's, you know, tactical faults, the players didn't like him, you know, rumours of, you know, the players not getting on well with him and all that. He did lead, was part of a culture, you know, with Craig Lambert there as well for their boss, but who knows if he's going to be suspended or not with the Whitfield investigation. But with Lambert there, and, you know, with as a welfare boss and other, you know, members of the list management team, they were actually very good at re-signing a lot of their younger talent this year, maybe for overs, but at least they're there. At least they've recommitted to the club, so they've got a base from a list management perspective to build on into their future. They're not worried about, you know, like the walkout five a few years ago of one of their young talent wanting to leave, except for maybe Rockliffe, but he's not that young anymore.
Yeah, and some of the major pluses to take away from Brisbane's season from a list management perspective is that guys like Shackey, Hipwood, Matheson, Keys, Archie Smith, Jared Jensen, Michael Close all had really solid seasons.
Archie Smith was a revelation from, you know, late in the year, and their worries about how they could move forward past Stephen Martin in the ruck, you know, in a matter of a handful, like two games, pretty much been all but solved. And Archie Smith is a great story, you know, with his American import basketball dad, you know, his involvement in the Brisbane Academy. It's why they exist, so we can bring the best of athletic talent from various sports over the footy. You know, Keys and Hipwood, you know, for first year players, you couldn't, in a poor team, you really couldn't ask more for them. And these players are the ones, you know, they need to hope that they recommit long term into the future. There certainly is a foundation there. However, there's still a lot of, you know, decisions that they can make in the short term.
Yeah. There's also a few other players, even some youngsters that Lepich did try, that probably don't look like they, you know, would be in the Brisbane Lions' future plans. Like guys like Ryan Harwood, Josh Green, Jaden McGrath, Jonathan Freeman, and Matthew Hamelman.
Well, Hamelman's going to stay. He's still young and he's still developing. Freeman's had injuries, you know.
I think Jaden McGrath's had a few injuries as well.
Yeah.
But
players like Jaden McGrath probably aren't going to be there long term. And, you know, they're going to, you know, push players out like, you know, Josh Walker and that short... You know, Trent West retired, you know, short-term fixes. But there's still, despite, you know, the fact that we talk about they've re-signed along a lot of young players, the reason they have re-signed a lot of young players is they're simply by far the youngest list in the AFL. So they've just got a lot of young players full stop. So a lot of them are re-signed, but a lot of them are staying. There's still going to be a lot of list spots open, a lot of decisions to be made from a list management point of view.
Yeah. In terms of players that they can... Sorry, you go.
So, you know, you're saying what positions do they need to build around?
Yeah, I think obviously they need to get key defenders in. That is a no-brainer. I mean, we talked about Jack Frost before. That probably wouldn't be a good move to try and get him into the first team, you know. From a depth perspective, it's probably not that bad. Michael Ferrito, what do you think of that?
No, I don't reckon Michael Ferrito will go anywhere. But I do agree with you that they need a key defender. And building around Harris Andrews... We love Harris Andrews here at the podcast. We think he's going to be a superstar. But he's just one man in a defence. And whilst a lot of their defensive issues, you know, one of the worst historically one of the worst teams in conceding points, a lot of that was, you know, structure, coaching, tactics and all that, but a lot of it was personnel. So they just need to upgrade their whole defensive unit, key defensive. And whether they do that through trades or free agency or the drafts will be interesting. But you hope that they will go after someone a bit fresher than someone like Ferreira.
Yeah, and I just did a little bit of research the other day, and I was looking into Adelaide list.
Yeah.
And there was someone there who is sort of forgotten. Like, a lot of people have forgotten just how good he can be and how good he was for the Crows a few years back, and that's Andy Otten.
He's had injuries.
He's had
could be a player that we're talking about could be work for. They could recruit a player like Mitch Brown or Eric McKenzie from
West Coast.
From West Coast, who are on the fringe, you know, like McGovern and Barras have turned out well for him. We seem to mention them every time there's key defenders on the market. Maybe someone like Fletcher Roberts from the Dogs. I know his contract for next year, but you know, Hamlin playing well and Marcus Adams coming back. Or whether they look to draft someone, a mature age key defender, like Hartley or Marcus Adams.
Yeah, and just quickly on Andy Otten.
Yeah,
just with guys like Talia Hartigan and Jake Lieber, who hold down those key defensive positions at the Crows, there wouldn't be really a guy like Andy Otten probably wouldn't be getting into that first team anytime soon, especially considering he's very young.
But he's one of many options that they have, like I just said in
guys Brown, like Roberts and Brown and stuff.
McKenzie or a mature agent. But they definitely need to upgrade that position in key defence.
Yeah. Another area I reckon they probably need to improve in is their small forward department.
Especially if Josh Green might get traded.
Yeah, and we mentioned before about how Ben Keyes was wasted as a small forward throughout the whole year. He's going to be predominantly a midfielder.
Midfield, yeah.
Ryan Lester is more of a third tall option, but if they want
to... He is sort of tallish as a third tall, but he plays a bit more mobile.
Yeah, he's a bit more mobile than most third talls would be, but I think guys like him and Rowan Buick could probably be utilised a little more, though they're probably not AFL standard. They are AFL standard.
When we mention these re-signings that they did throughout the year, that include players like Lester and Buick, who are a bit limited in their long-term potential, and they're not too young now. However, a new coach could reinvigorate them. They could be the small forwards that they were after. But a lot of clubs are looking for a small forward, and I don't think it's... Although they'd like to improve the nature of their small forwards on their list, I don't think it's quite as big as a deal structurally having the key defenders there, but it is still an area that they'll definitely look to improve.
Yeah. I've just got a couple of players here that I did with Andy Otten, I did a bit of research on. Tim Broomhead seems to be on the fringes at Collingwood with Jamie Elliott, Alex Fasolo, Jarrod Blair, Jordan DeGoey is serving himself in the forward line. And he could probably attract a little bit of interest. And the Pies have done a lot of deals with the Lions in the past. Guys like Dane Beams, Jackson Payne. They do have a good relationship. This manager's have a good relationship.
I'm not a huge fan of players like Lester and Buick, but will Broomhead offer much more than those in a role in their team?
The fact that he's been injured and he only played a couple of games this year probably means that he's probably on the same level as them, if not maybe a little higher. But the fact that he wasn't a first round.
Wouldn't be against it if they can get him cheaply, but maybe they need to get players in their list, and they need to get talent in their list, and Broomhead is possibly one of those players.
Yeah, another one here is Mitch Honeychurch from the Dogs. Now he's had a very good season in the VFL, from what I can understand, despite only playing.
He's one of the favourites for the list and medal. However, he's more of a natural midfielder, and he's still contracted for next year. So if he does get traded, he'll probably want to stay in Melbourne. But on the other hand, it could be someone like Nathan Rovat, who's out of contract from the Dogs, who's a bit more outside, a bit more forward. So one of Honeychurch and Rovat could be a player like from the Dogs.
And a guy like Rovat, wasn't he the captain of his TAC Cup team?
Yeah, and he was a captain of Vic Metro, I think he was as well. So yeah. in the under-18 year, so could offer a bit of leadership.
He would offer a lot to the Brisbane Lions on lots of different levels there. Just in general, what do you think they need to do in the off-season? Like, obviously they need to get key defenders and probably a couple of small forwards, but do you think there's anything else they need to work on?
Well, they don't necessarily need to bring in youth. I mean, they shouldn't bring in, you know, blokes past it, like you thought Ferreira. If they do bring in him, it might be to teach him how to play defence structurally. But they're just such a young list that they could add so much many more older players and still be a young list. So it's not a matter of, you know, bringing in more young talent. They've certainly got the young talent there. They've certainly re-signed a lot of their older players. It's now a matter of utilising their salary cap room, using the promise of a new coach to be recruiting, way to recruit players in positions of need, you know, like key defence and that. It's always hard for Brisbane to recruit players though, because they've got among the worst training facilities, or if not the worst training facilities of any club in the league.
Mm.
And it's, you know, they're playing in front of smaller and smaller crowds, you know, administratively they've been poor. So that has flow down implications on their list management.
Yeah. And I think with the addition of a new coach, someone like a John Barker, maybe possibly.
Brett Montgomery,
possibly. There's a few options that the Lions have. A new coach like that, like you said before, could invigorate the side and probably, and possibly the club as a whole, like Luke Beveridge.
And a new footy department boss, yeah.
Yeah, a guy like Luke Beveridge has been brilliant for the Dogs because he's completely changed the way they go about it.
And I mean, it was for different reasons. Dogs won 7 games when McCartney left, but the culture and the players were in disarray. But broadly speaking, both clubs were in a bit of a crisis. So the Dogs did the smart thing. They brought in a player with external experience. You know, he was an accountant in Luke Beveridge, as well as a coaching pedigree in some of the best, you know, successful clubs in Collingwood and Hawthorn. So Brisbane have made mistakes in the past, you know, recruiting old players in Boston Leckage.
And just in the draft, but guys like in the draft as well, I can't remember who the player was that they passed up on in the draft a few years back.
Every club passes on players though.
Yeah, but I, from what I remember, they chose, I can't remember who he was, but I do know he's a pretty good player nowadays.
That's a very descriptive case.
Yeah, but I do remember that they chose Albert Proud over him.
Going back a few years though, it's not really relevant.
Yeah, but you just think about it, like...
Oh, but you could say that about any club.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Richard Tambling thing is an obvious one.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just something that I've got, that I've just remembered from an article a few weeks back about how Lee Matthews chose Albert Proud over a certain guy because he wanted a local boy.
And Lee Matthews is the bloke who hired Lepich, and he's a deputy chairman, or whatever his role is now, though, so...
And I think the reason I bring that up is I just think it shows how much they need to improve perspective.
They've got a new footy department boss coming in as well. So, like, you know, rumours they're linked to Neil Barman and all that. So whether he either brings in a new list management team or reshapes their list management directive, which has been reasonably successful this year with all the young players re-signing, but whether it means that they, I don't know, use analytics more in their recruiting, whether they are more aggressive in their policy to recruit, whether they are more willing to trade, or however the new footy department boss retools their list management strategy, combined with a new coach. So, and like the Yaz song, "The Only Way Is Up."
All right, that will conclude our Steak Knives AFL podcast for this week. Thank you for joining me, Nick.
It's fantastic, Caleb.
Look forward to our National Women's League segment coming up very soon. Thanks again for listening, and speak to you soon.